It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Today we're talking about preserving a physical piece of Las Vegas history, connected with a man, Howard Hughes, who is also a big part of Las Vegas history. Joining me are Amber Colbert, administrator of the Clark County Museum, legendary journalist and broadcaster Bob Stodall, and Jeff Schumacher, director of research, collections, and programs at the Mob Museum, and one of the foremost experts on Howard Hughes and Las Vegas history. We'll explore why Howard Hughes changed the course of Southern Nevada, why the historic Howard Hughes Greenhouse deserves to be saved, the effort to relocate it to the Clark County Museum, and how the community can help make this ambitious preservation project a reality. If you love Las Vegas history, this is a conversation you won't want to miss. And for more information on contributing to the move, go to clarkcountymuseumguild.org, clarkcountymuseumguild.org. And Amber, Bob, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning. Question for you all. How did this project come together and why? Each of you want to take a part of it or one person, however you want to do it?
Yeah, I kind of will start off. So about 5 years ago in 2021, on the second day of me being official administrator of Clark County Museum, I received a phone call from KLAS, the VP at that time. Her name was Lisa. And she said, "We hear you move buildings out to your museum. Would you like another?" And I was a little bit overwhelmed at first. And I said, "Well, what building is it?" And she mentioned the Howard Hughes Greenhouse. And that's where the project started. Clark County Museum hadn't moved a building for about 20 years. So we had to figure out, A, is this feasible? And B, is this something that we want to invest in? So we started talking to some experts like Jeff, structural engineers to see if this was something possible. And it grew from there. And then just recently, about a year ago, we kind of went public with our fundraising efforts. Now that we know how much it's going to cost and what's going to kind of the basis of what's going to have to happen, we went to the public and we're really looking for this to be a community-based project. And since then, we've added Bob and Jeff to the team of trying to get the word out there about the project and the importance of the history that's really attached to it.
I have the sneaky suspicion that Bob is in the background causing Channel 8 to call you. That's just my theory. I have no proof, but...
To some degree, in the sense that the greenhouse, the Howard Hughes house, is not only important to the history of the community, and quite frankly, I think the Southwest, it's also important to the history of KLAS-TV. That building, after Mr. Hughes left, stood idle for many years, but was when Channel 8, the Landmark Communication, bought it from Summa Corporation after Mr. Hughes died, it was turned into offices and different things as the TV station expanded. It was the first internet site of a local television station in Southern Nevada. So it's had many historical moments.
And Jeff, you your take on the greenhouse is different from other historians in terms of whether Howard Hughes actually slept there versus just worked there at all.
Right. You know, there's no question that Howard Hughes, that was his residence for a year in the early 1950s, 1953, 54. He was spending the bulk of his time in Las Vegas at that time. Lots of interesting things were happening. He was acquiring the land that became Summerlin later. He was creating the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. So a lot was happening. But my understanding in talking to Hughes executives who know about these things and knew about Hughes's patterns were that he also kept several rooms at the Flamingo Hotel at that time, and he preferred to sleep there. So he would spend his days perhaps working at the house, but that he didn't necessarily sleep there.
But clearly to all three of you, it's a historic house, regardless of whether he slept there overnight or not. And you mentioned about the structural aspects of it. I guess Melvin Green is the structural engineer that took a look at that and became involved in this project.
Yeah. Mel Green and Associates are the ones that we hired for the feasibility study and have continued to hire for this planning process we're going through. And he's pivotal to a lot of the museum buildings here we have currently. So we have 16 historical structures. He's helped with at least three of them. He's helped with moving the LeConte for the Neon Museum. So if you need to move a historical building, Mel Green is your structural
engineer. In other words, I should call him to move my house. Okay.
Let me jump back.
That's
one of the things that Jeff and I have some disagreement over. I think that Howard Hughes did sleep there, whether or not he also slept at the Flamingo, which I think is obviously he did. But when we were able to go into the Hughes house when it was first open, or actually before it was open, we were able to sneak in there. And in the kitchen were cereal boxes. The bathroom clearly had been used. The beds had been slept in. The closets were just jammed full of his clothes. So, and he had converted the kitchen into a very sanitary place with this giant fan that was maybe a couple of feet above the burners, as well as entryways to each door. You had to go in to a space, close it, and then you were allowed inside the house. So there were all kinds of these things that were throughout the house that would indicate to me he spent considerable time there, and I don't think he came there early in the morning, had a Roy Rogers cereal box, but did he live there? Because that's what we found and have donated those to the museum. Whether he stayed there every night, I don't think he did, but whether he was there, I think he was. Clearly, there was enough evidence and enough proof, as well as the other places that Jeff mentioned.
Right, but the two of you are still friends, even though you disagree.
Very much.
Yes. I should go back for a second. And Amber, let us know what the Clark County Museum Guild is. I mentioned that in the opening and how people could contribute to the move.
Yeah, this past year, our Clark County Museum Guild actually turned 50. So it's a nonprofit organization that was formed in the community early on in our history of the museum to support us financially. So we are funded by Clark County by taxpayer revenues. That doesn't always do enough. So this nonprofit came together. It was started out more of like a social club to do fundraising. They had fashion shows and luncheons, but now has become a pivotal part of the operations of Clark County Museum. Most of our buildings have been funded in some way by some of their fundraising efforts. But they're also an organization that are out there in the community trying to get people involved with museums and the importance of preservation and get out there. So they're the ones that are really fundraising the remaining amount. So there's about a third left of the fundraising to do. And then they're ones that are out there holding events. They're, you know, hopefully have more events coming up in the future and looking for people that want to get involved, not just the Howard Hughes Project, but in preserving history for Southern Nevada all over.
Sure. And again, that's ClarkCountyMuseumGuild.org for more information. When the three of you look at this project, I mean, there's so many different elements to it. There's the preservation of the house itself as a structure. There's the moving of the structure to the museum. There's a situation or the where you situate the house at the museum, and then how that will be set up for people to come in and experience it. So there's all these parts to it. And have you thought about also just the, I'll use this overused term, but it's the only one I can think of at the moment. Excuse my voice, it's raspy a little bit. But is there a certain, when all three of you go into the house, is there a certain vibe when you get in? Do you get a sense of history when you go into the house?
Well, let me jump in there and say, the vibe that I get is that this is the only significant structure that Howard Hughes owned in Las Vegas. In a period of 1967-68, he bought a half a dozen hotel casinos on the Las Vegas Strip. They're all gone. They're all gone. They're from the Sands Hotel to the Desert Inn to the Silver Slipper. Those are, and he bought them in a 13-month period, as well as creating Air West or Hughes Air West Airlines. And yes, he, as Jeff pointed out, he bought the land in the early 50s where Summerlin is. But that was not was his plan. He wasn't going to build residential areas. And quite frankly, that wasn't the original plan of the Hughes estate. It sat there for the better part of more than a decade. So this Hughes house represents Hughes' investment in Las Vegas, and that story can be told through this one standing piece of Howard Hughes. Although Jeff may have another idea if there's another piece somewhere around.
No, I was actually going to just sort of elaborate on that. You know, Hughes is a very important figure in Las Vegas history. And yet we don't really have any kind, there's no statue, there's no landmark really that you can point to help people understand his role in the city. I mean, his name still appears on some, some of the buildings, like commercial buildings and so forth. But you know, the story can be told through this greenhouse. And it's nice because if it is preserved, then this story will be preserved for people. Not everybody is is digesting 600 page biographies anymore of the figures from Las Vegas history like I am. apparently I have a lot of time on my hands, but most people don't. They can go through this house and they can learn the basics. You know, once it's repositioned, they can learn the basics of the Howard Hughes story, and that's a valuable thing.
Well, and I think it's even bigger than that, because the house goes back to 1950, we believe, that it was built. So there's a whole story of our community and Howard being a part of that community and the growth and development from early, 1950s all the way through to when he owned the casinos and all of that. That's all there. And then what was left after and what has Summerlin become now? So there's really a lot to tell about the community growth. They're in a large part of our history that everyone kind of knows us for, but they don't know the community aspects of it and how Howard had this major role in it.
Well, the context of the time period is also important. When Howard Hughes bought the house, or initially maybe leased it, but bought the house in 1953, about 300 yards, not even that much, maybe 100 yards to the west, Channel 8 was being built. As he lived there, Channel 8 was being built there on Desert Inn Road and between Desert and now Convention Center Drive. That was in 1953. So he witnessed the building of KLAS and would later buy it in 1968. And he had great plans for television in general with the Hughes, I think, Sports Network and so forth. But it's all these things that Mr. Hughes was connected to that tell the story of the growth of this community. KLAS, as I mentioned, was the first television station in the state of Nevada. And that signifies where Las Vegas was going and how it was growing.
Do you think that he had more of a physical presence in those early days than later on when he moved back and stayed at the Desert Inn on the top floor, et cetera? In other words, those early days, there was less people here. He would have more of a physical impact, even if he didn't stay all the time in the greenhouse or did stay, either way.
I think he was comfortable in Las Vegas. I think he was more comfortable in Las Vegas than he was in Los Angeles. He'd able to walk around and not everybody would say, there's Mr. Hughes, can I have your autograph, or give him a hard time. But the same thing was true when he came back in 67. Was at that point, he came to Las Vegas in 1967, and a few months later, that's when I was hired at KLAS-TV and began anchoring the 11 o'clock newscast. And it was at that point that, quote, I met Mr. Hughes when he came over to the KLAS-TV. And for many years, I swore that it was Mr. Hughes because he looked like Howard Hughes, wearing a brown double-breasted suit early in the Sunday morning, hair back. And as I walked into KLAS-TV that Sunday morning, I walked down the hallway, and here comes this guy. And I say, good morning. He looks at me. We recognize each other, visually, so to speak. And we walk away. I turn around and say, wait a minute, that was Howard Hughes. then he disappeared. Then I could not find that person in the building. Well, the reality is, even though I would say for years that I had met Howard Hughes, me and Melvin, the fact is he was not in any physical condition to really come over to KLAS-TV. So the story sort of got erased. Oh, those is a 2% chance of maybe it was him. But he did call the television station after the 11 o'clock newscast, and he would want me to dig up more information about nuke power or atomic testing and those kinds of things. And I could hear his voice in the background yelling at his aide, tell him to get this, tell him to get that. So I did hear his voice. Now, whether I saw him or not, again, Jeff has helped me with some reality with Mr. Hughes.
Did you ever think of recording those conversations, even though he was in the background yelling at his aides?
Well, it was more like businesslike. I mean, the only thing, one of Hughes' aides did come to me during that period of time and leaned over and said, Mr. Hughes would like you to smile more. No, it wasn't like, oh, that was Howard Hughes. It was more part of business, and only years later, of course, what I would say, record the conversation. But no, that wasn't a real thought.
Did you have a sense back then, Bob, when you first started talking with him through his aides, even heard him in the background, did you have a sense of how important he was to Las Vegas?
The direct answer is no. It was more, oh, he bought another hotel. He bought another, because he was buying, again, in a 13-month period, 6 strip hotels. And he tried to buy the 7th, the Stardust Hotel. But the government said, no, you have too many. I often wondered, was he trying to buy the entire Las Vegas Strip? Was everything up for sale? No, it wasn't. It was more, he was my, not, I don't want to say my boss, but he was more the, no, I missed that boat. I just thought he was another investor in Las Vegas. And of course he had this great background, crashing a plane into Lake Mead, and there's a lot of history that he had, but I missed that boat.
Well, Jeff got close to a lot of people who knew Howard Hughes. He didn't know Howard Hughes directly, unless I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, but certainly when you wrote your book on Howard Hughes, you were interviewing a lot of people. Will that book be on sale, Amber, at the house once it's moved?
Absolutely. It's actually already on sale at the museum here.
Oh, good. Okay. Just want to make sure.
I wanted to note something. You know, Bob mentioned he bought 6 hotel casinos in Las Vegas, and then he wanted to buy another one, the Stardust. Actually, underappreciated, he also was negotiating to buy the Dunes. So he was probably trying to buy all the casinos if he could. Wow. If he had stuck around, he might have been able to. Because what happened is the Johnson administration was fighting him. They didn't want him to expand any further because they were concerned about him having a monopoly. But then when Nixon was elected, Nixon's like, hey, let's go, you know, do whatever you want. So he was trying to buy the Dunes as well.
Yeah. The rumor is that he wanted to buy all those so he could hire Wayne Newton. Is that true?
I've never heard that.
I made that up just because Wayne, you're right, seemed to be every Summa property he was headlining at the time. Yeah. So that's an interesting concept. Well, the challenge for the all of you, of course, is how do you move this along smoothly? Again, I referred to it earlier. You have the physical house. You have the transportation of that house to the museum. You have where you're going to put it. And I assume you have a site for it already at the Clark County Museum. And then in Clark County, and then also, and we should also, I'll just do this because people always say Las Vegas, but it's really Clark County that this encompasses with Howard Hughes and the museum itself. He had that big of an impact. And as Bob said earlier, it's the Southwest. He really had this major impact. But you also then have to design what the house will look like once it's there at the museum site. So in other words, will there be audiovisual elements to it? Will it be live guides coming through when you go in to explain? Will Jeff's book be on display right inside the house? You know, these are important questions.
Yes. So right now, the way we're looking at the house, if you've ever been to Clark County Museum, as I said, we have 16 historical structures that have already been moved here, representing from the early 1900s all the way to the 1960s. And the way they are staged is as if you're just walking into, you know, the Beckley's home in the 1920s, and we have mannequins wearing clothes that they would have worn. This one we're hoping to do a little different in the fact that it was a broader time span we're hoping to represent. There's multiple things, plus the fact that there are no photographs of what it looked like when Howard Hughes was using it. There's very limited photographs of it in its early days period. So how can we stage something to look like it did when we don't know what it looked like? And that is part of the lure of Howard Hughes and his history. Some of it is kind of that myth and that legend and the passed on stories that change over the years. So our goal is to kind of not just represent Howard Hughes, but we're also going to talk about KLAS history, entertainment history in our community as well, because Casino was filmed, part of Casino was filmed there as well. But also one, I think the key components is to get public involved in telling their stories that they've heard of Howard Hughes. As I've gone through this project, you can talk to anybody and they have a story like Bob, where it's, you know, I once almost met Howard Hughes, or I once almost talked to Howard Hughes, or I heard this happen and he did this A, B, C, and D. And so everyone has this connection because they've heard these stories. And I really want to have a component where we can actually record those stories and broadcast them too. I think that will be an important concept, as well as we aren't going to have mannequins in this house because we don't know what Howard Hughes was doing in the house. And we want to keep that up to, if we don't know, we can, all we can do is keep examining.
Ira, I think my goal here is finding the Howard Hughes will. When we lift that house up and move it away, hopefully we're going to find the will that is buried there. And I suspect we will find a couple of treasures, though, as we lift the house up.
Yeah, that will be interesting. I mentioned earlier the concept of the vibe, and I want to go back to that for a second. I'm assuming that all three of you have been in the house at some point or another. And could you explain from each of you individually what the feeling is like, if that's a word, vibe, or just a sense when you walk into it, understanding that there's differences of whether he slept there or didn't sleep there, whether it was occupied by this person or not, but it's still a piece of Las Vegas and Clark County history. What was your sense, Bob, as a historian going in there? Jeff, you as a historian and author, and Amber, you as a museum administrator, when you walk in there, do you get a sense of the past, of history, of his presence?
Well, you get us what you, the first vibe that I got was an architectural, a home that was built in 1950s, a two-bedroom home with a dining room and a kitchen and so forth. And when we were able to go in there, it had been frozen in time. So we were able to get transported back to 1953. And that was the vibe that you get. The only other thing that really stood out to me were these brown boxes that were, I think that there were seven or eight of them throughout the house, and they were designed so Howard Hughes, who had a hearing problem, they were amplifying the telephone. And that was the one thing that sort of jumped out at me. That was, other than that, the living room, the front room, did have an office environment, old dictaphone equipment and that kind of a thing. But then you get the Howard Hughes feel, except for the suits. Mm-hmm. There must have been 50 or 60 brown suits, it seemed, and that's my memory crammed together. But it was more just a vibe of being transported back into the 50s.
You know, I had the great pleasure of when my first edition of my book was released in 2008. We did the event there at the greenhouse, one of the events. And I invited people. By then, at that time, people were still, who knew he was, were still around. And some of those individuals were invited to the event. And it wasn't so much me seeing the house, because I didn't have a lot of context, but them seeing it, the house, a house that they had never been in before, even though they'd heard about it and they knew about it and they were familiar with the Hughes story intimately. They had never been, there'd been no reason for them to go into this house. And for them to have this sort of tangible connection to their old boss, to their old, you know, icon, was a pretty moving experience. So for me, that first visit was the one that had that vibe that you're talking about, Ira. Not today. It's still cool, and it's more like a small mid-century house now.
And Amber?
My first feeling when I got there, and I still continue to have this feeling, is this feeling of like quiet, peaceful, like when you walk in, you're in the middle right now where it stands. You stand out front. You can see the Encore. You can see the Sphere. You can see the convention center. All this business that has grown up around it. But when you walk through the door, there's this quiet serenity that happens in this house. And you're transported to a time. Right now we have it staged for some tours for the era and some exhibits. So it does kind of transform you back to the 50s. But I've done work in there. It's an amazing, quiet place that's centrally located in the middle of everything going on around our city. And I'd say that's what I get mostly out of, is this quiet, peaceful reclusiveness.
What's the target date for completion of the fundraising and for the moving of the house to the Clark County Museum?
So we are hoping by the end of 2028, if all the fundraising is completed, which right now we're at 1.6 million needed of the 4.3 million, that it will move by the end of 2028 to our location. And then from there begins that process of putting it up for exhibit, which is, as you said, a whole nother process. But we do believe hopefully by 2028, it will move to the grounds. By the end of 2029, we can turn the key and open the door and step inside and then start that exhibit process.
I think if my math is right, that's your 75th. That would be the 75th birthday, roughly.
What? I think 60th. Right? Yeah, because we're 58 right now. Yeah.
Okay.
60th birthday, yeah.
Yeah, great. No, before I let all of you go, how about just an individual take on what you see as once it's moved to the Clark County Museum? And obviously, we're all optimistic that that will happen. So just from each of you, a little bit of summation, we have about 2 minutes left, of what you see as it representing once it's there, situated at the Clark County Museum, and all fitted out and ready to go.
For me, it's a unique piece of unique and important piece of our history, the history of Southern Nevada, the growth and development of Southern Nevada, the transition when Hughes bought the 6 hotels, resorts on the Strip. That was also a transition in our primary hospitality industry, began moving away from the boys, the mob. All kinds of things were taking place during that late 60s, early 70 period when Howard Hughes was there. And it also represents the post-World War II era. So it's so much information and so much excitement. I think it's going to be a standout facility at the Clark County Museum.
Jeff?
Yeah, you know, Ira, you know, when you historians today think about how you talk about history, the idea today, the most popular theme is that it's not about individuals making things happen, right? It's about groups, organizations, social interaction. But in the case of Las Vegas, I've always argued that there have been this handful of individuals who have had a profound impact and have had the ability to make the city move forward. And Howard Hughes is one of those individuals. So the fact that he can be profiled as he is at the Mob Museum, but also at the Clark County Museum and the Nevada State Museum, I think is really valuable.
And Amber?
I see this being as a place where school children and residents and visitors can really come and actually connect to history and see history come alive. And a time period that was really pivotal in the development of our community, and a person whose innovation really helped drive that forward. And part of that's going to be, you know, getting school kids out here. We're going to hopefully make a classroom in there where kids can get hands-on with artifacts and actually see history in action, see it, touch it, feel it, and connect to history.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guests have been Amber Colbert, administrator of the Clark County Museum, legendary journalist and broadcaster Bob Stowedall, and Jeff Schumacher. He's director of research, collections, and programs at the Bob Museum and one of the foremost experts on Howard Hughes and Las Vegas history. For more information on contributing to the move, go to ClarkCountyMuseumGuild.org, ClarkCountyMuseumGuild.org. And Amber, Bob, Jeff, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah,